I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The situation in the country is critical. People can no longer go about their business. Our children can no longer go to school. Merchants can't go to the market. No one can move around the country.
Haiti's in turmoil as fighting rages between police and armed groups calling for the resignation of unelected Prime Minister Ariel Henry, who remains outside Haiti. We'll get the latest. Then, guilty. The former president of Honduras, Juan Orlando Hernandez, is convicted of cocaine trafficking after a two-week trial in U.S. federal court here in New York. We'll go to Tegucigalpa to get reaction from the ground and look at the role of the United States in propping him up.
This is not a case of the U.S. suddenly heroically helping the Honduran people. It was the U.S. that destroyed the criminal justice system. It destroyed the rule of law in Honduras and now want to act like it's riding in like the rescuer on horseback to convict this man that the Biden and Trump and Obama administrations all supported.
And we get a report from Gaza. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel is continuing to attack Gaza as Palestinians mark the first day of Ramadan. The death toll from Israel's five-month assault has topped 31,000. Health officials in Gaza say at least 27 Palestinians have starved to death due to Israel's ongoing blockade of aid deliveries. Over the weekend, five Palestinians died in northern Gaza as a pallet of food aid crushed them to death after a parachute failed to open. The United States has begun shipping parts to build a temporary port off the coast of Gaza to increase aid following President Biden's announcement during his State of the Union address last week. But many groups say the plan will take too long and is insufficient to address the looming famine in Gaza. The head of Doctors Without Borders in the U.S. said, quote, the U.S. plan for a temporary pier in Gaza to increase the flow of humanitarian aid is a glaring distraction from the real problem, Israelis' indiscriminate and disproportionate military campaign and punishing siege, unquote. Inside Gaza, Palestinians are struggling to find any food to eat.
I came here to buy, but I can't find anything to buy. There's nothing. There are no dates or milk or anything. One can't find anything for their children. How are we supposed to have sahur, the meal before the fast starts at dawn? How are we supposed to have iftar, the meal that breaks the fast? With canned goods? All these canned goods are full of germs that infect the stomach. We need vegetables and fruits to feed our children because they've weakened and died from hunger.
During an interview on MSNBC, President Biden criticized Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu by saying he's hurting Israel more than helping Israel.
He has a right to defend Israel, a right to continue to pursue Hamas, but he must pay more attention to the innocent lives being lost as a consequence of the actions taken. He's hurting, in my view, he's hurting Israel more than helping Israel by making the rest of the world. It's contrary to what Israel stands for, and I think it's a big mistake. So I want to see a ceasefire.
In the same interview with MSNBC's Jonathan Capehart, Biden warned Netanyahu against invading Rafah, but he also vowed to keep arming Israel regardless of what Israel does in Gaza.
What is your red line with Prime Minister Netanyahu? Do you have a red line? For instance, would invasion of Rafah, which you have urged him not to do, would that be a red line?
It is a red line, but I'm never going to leave Israel. The defense of Israel is still critical, so there's no red line. I'm going to cut off all weapons so they don't have the Iron Dome to protect them. They don't have, but there's red lines that if he crosses and they cannot have 30,000 more Palestinians dead.
Netanyahu responded by vowing to defy Biden's red line on Rafah, saying, quote, we'll go there. We're not going to leave. Caribbean leaders are holding an emergency meeting in Jamaica today to discuss the political and humanitarian crisis in Haiti, where armed groups are attempting to force the resignation of Haiti's unelected Prime Minister, Ariel Henry, who's long been a U.S. ally. Henry has been stranded in Puerto Rico since last week, unable to return home as increasing violence has left Haitians struggling to secure food and water. Over the weekend, the U.S. flew a team of Marines into Haiti as the security situation around the U.S. embassy deteriorated. Non-essential staff at the embassy were airlifted out of Haiti. We'll have more on Haiti after headlines. Pope Francis has called on Ukraine to have the courage to wave the white flag and begin negotiations with Russia. The Pope made the comment in an interview with the Swiss broadcaster RSI.
It is one interpretation. It's true. But I think that the strongest one is the one who looks at the situation, thinks about the people, and has the courage of the white flag, of negotiating. And today, you can negotiate with the help of the international powers. There are some. The word negotiate is a courageous word. When you see that you are defeated, when things are not going well, you have to have the courage to negotiate. One may feel shame, but how many dead will the war end up with? And it will end even worse. One should negotiate in time. Find a country that can be a mediator.
Several Ukrainian and European officials criticized the Pope's call for negotiations. In New York, former Honduran President Juan Orlando Hernandez was found guilty of cocaine trafficking after a two-week trial. Federal prosecutors had accused Hernandez of ruling the Central American country as a narco state, accepting millions of dollars in bribes from drug traffickers in exchange for protection. Celebrations erupted following Friday's verdict. This is a Honduran activist speaking outside Manhattan's federal courthouse.
The rotten political class we have has brought the country to total collapse. And everyone we see here, this entire community thirsting for justice, is a clear example of a society in total collapse that has been trampled on and sunk by corrupt politicians.
Hernandez was arrested in February of 2022. Less than a month after his presidential term ended, and extradited to the U.S. in April 2022. He was a longtime U.S. ally. His brother is already serving a life sentence in the U.S. for smuggling cocaine. Juan Orlando Hernandez faces life in prison as well. We'll have more on the trial later in the show. The Sudanese military has rejected U.N. calls for a truce and fighting with its rival Rapid Support Forces during the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. The RSF had said it welcomed the truce. The U.N. Security Council adopted a resolution Friday urging an end to nearly 1 year of fighting. The U.N. also expressed grave concern over the deteriorating humanitarian crisis in Sudan. This is China's deputy U.N. ambassador speaking Friday.
The lives of all the people in the world are precious. While adopting a resolution on a ceasefire during the month of Ramadan in Sudan, the Security Council must not forget that the people of Gaza are still suffering under bombardment. The international community must push forward for an immediate ceasefire and an end to the conflict in Gaza to give the people some hope for survival and provide the basic security necessary for all religious activities by the Muslims there.
In an interview with MSNBC, President Biden said he regrets using the word illegal during his State of the Union to describe a Venezuelan immigrant accused of killing Lakin Riley, a Georgia nursing student.
An undocumented person. And I shouldn't have used illegal. It's undocumented.
So you regret using that word?
Yes.
During a campaign rally in Georgia, former President Donald Trump attacked Biden over the issue.
I say he was an illegal alien, he was an illegal immigrant, he was an illegal migrant, and he shouldn't have been in our country, and he never would have been under the Trump policy.
During the same speech, Trump mocked President Biden's stutter.
Didn't it bring us together? Remember, to bring the country to together. I'm going to bring it together. No.
Donald Trump's rally in Georgia came a day after he hosted Hungary's authoritarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban at Mar-a-Lago. Trump openly praised Orban's autocratic style of rule.
There's nobody that's better, smarter, or a better leader than Viktor Orban. He's fantastic. He's the, as you know, the Prime Minister of Hungary, and does a great job. He's a non-controversial figure because he said this is the way it's going to be, and that's the end of it, right? He's the boss.
That was Donald Trump speaking at Mar-a-Lago. A UN fact-finding mission has found Iran is responsible for the physical violence that killed Mahsa Amini in September 2022, sparking historic nationwide protests for months. Mahsa Amini was a 22-year-old Kurdish woman who was arrested by Iran's so-called morality police, allegedly for not wearing a hijab properly. Hundreds of people were arrested in demonstrations that erupted after her death. In a recent report, UN officials also accused Tehran of committing crimes against humanity while employing, quote, unnecessary and disproportionate use of lethal force, unquote, to crack down on the protests. Hundreds were killed by Iranian police forces, while at least 9 demonstrators have been executed. Millions of people across the globe took to the streets Friday, marking International Women's Day. Marches took place in Pakistan, Indonesia, Bangladesh, Spain, Ukraine, Brazil, and dozens of cities around the world. In a historic move, France enshrined abortion rights in its constitution as crowds gathered in Paris Friday. Meanwhile, over 180,000 people rallied in Mexico City, denouncing rampant gender violence and femicides as nearly 10 women were killed every day in Mexico last year.
I worry about my friends. I'm worried something might happen to my daughter when she goes out to the street. I'm worried for all the women who never returned home and the families who are looking for them.
And hundreds of protesters calling for a ceasefire in Gaza blocked traffic on Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood Sunday, forcing a short delay to the start of the Oscars. Several actors and musicians wore red Artists for Ceasefire pins, including Oscar-winning Billie Eilish, Rami Youssef, and Mark Ruffalo, who arrived late to the ceremony due to the protests.
They're starting. We're late. We're late.
The Palestinian protests shut down the Oscars tonight. Humanity wins.
During the Oscar ceremony, filmmaker Jonathan Glazer condemned the Israeli occupation after his Holocaust film, The Zone of Interest, won an Oscar for Best International Film.
Our film shows where dehumanization leads at its worst. It shaped all of our past and present. Right now, we stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people. Whether the victims of October... Whether the victims of October the 7th in Israel or the ongoing attack on Gaza, all the victims of this dehumanization. How do we resist?
The Oscar for Best Documentary went to 20 Days in Mariupol about Russia's siege on the Ukrainian city. The film was directed by Mstislav Chernov, a Ukrainian video journalist with the Associated Press.
This is the first Oscar in Ukrainian history. And I'm honored. But probably I will be the first director on this stage who will say, I wish I would never made this film. I wish to be able to exchange this to Russia never attacking Ukraine, never occupying our cities.
Go to Democracy Now! To see our coverage of 20 Days in Mariupol and The Zone of Interest. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show in Haiti, where fighting continues between police and armed groups calling for the resignation of the unelected Prime Minister Ariel Henry. Over the weekend, police and palace guards worked to retake some streets in the capital, Port-au-Prince, after armed gangs launched large-scale attacks on at least 3 police stations. Haiti's been under a state of emergency for the past week, with tens of thousands displaced amidst the fighting. UN officials are warning Haiti's health system is nearing collapse due to shortages of staff, equipment, and other resources to treat a growing number of wounded patients. Meanwhile, the U.S. military said Sunday it conducted an overnight mission to airlift non-essential U.S. staff out of Haiti and to boost security at the U.S. Embassy in Port-au-Prince. Caribbean leaders issued a call late Friday for an emergency meeting today in Jamaica. They've invited the United States, France, Canada, the UN, and Brazil to the meeting. CARICOM, the 15-nation Caribbean bloc, said in a statement, quote, "The situation on the ground remains dire." Ariel Henry was appointed prime minister after the July 2021 assassination of President Jovenel Moïse. Henry still has not returned to Haiti after a trip to Kenya, where he was seeking a deal for a long-delayed UN-backed mission to Haiti. Kenya announced last year it would lead the force, but it has effectively been placed on hold. Henry arrived in Puerto Rico Tuesday after he was unable to land in the Dominican Republic, with the Dominican president saying Henry was not welcome in the country for safety reasons. For more, we're joined by Jemima Pierre, professor at the Social Justice Institute at the University of British Columbia in Canada and research associate at the University of Johannesburg. She's a Haitian-American scholar and co-coordinator of the Black Alliance for Peace's Haiti Americas team, which has been closely following the crisis in Haiti. Her recent article for NACLA is headlined, "Haiti as Empire's Laboratory." Professor Pierre, welcome back to Democracy Now. Can you start off by describing what you understand is the latest on the ground, who the armed groups are, and the different sectors of Haitian society that are joining together with those armed gangs and calling for the resignation of the unelected Prime Minister Henry?
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me, Amy. One of the things that we need to just start off with is just these are paramilitary forces. I think gangs is an insufficient name for them because a lot of them are former military and former police officers, and they're heavily armed. What's happening is a bunch of different groups coming together to say, and they call themselves now Vive Ensemble, which is live together, a bunch of different various armed young men in groups to say that they want to get rid of Ariel Henry. Now, we hear that there are negotiations happening around the clock, and apparently there's supposed to be negotiations going on today, I think in Jamaica or by the CARICOM countries that include the U.S., France, and Canada. The problem, though, is the fact that there are all these negotiations going on outside of Haiti by many foreigners with no main participation from the Haitian masses. And I think, you know, we have to go back to understand that the root of this crisis is not last week, it's not this week, it's not even Ariel Henry, but we have to go back to 2004 with the coup d'etat.
So take us on that journey back. If you'll give us the historical context in your piece, it's headlined "Haiti as Empire's Laboratory." In it, you write, "Haiti has been and continues to be the main laboratory for U.S. imperial machinations in the region and throughout the world." Explain.
Yes, definitely. You know, we say the crisis in Haiti is a crisis of imperialism. In 2004, as has been revealed and admitted to, the U.S., France, and Canada got together and backed a coup d'etat against the country's first democratically elected president, Jean-Bertrand Aristide. And the U.S. Marines flew into his home, put him on a plane with his security officials, his wife, and aide, and flew them to the Central African Republic. And people can actually go to the Democracy Now! Archives, which covered this live. And I remember listening to this happening live. And the point of this was that this coup d'etat, which was led by two permanent members of the UN Security Council, was then sanctioned by the UN when these same two members of the UN Security Council, and that's US and France, basically pushed the UN Security Council into sending a multinational military force to Haiti, an arm under Chapter 7 deployment. And that itself was illegal because the original coup d'etat was illegal. The U.S. ambassador to Haiti and the deputy ambassador were in the process. They're the ones that named who the interim a president would be, put together a council of sages, and basically restructured Haiti's elected president. And back then we had 7,000 elected officials. Today we have zero. And over time, I say Haiti has been under occupation because it is this military occupation, the minister occupation that went from 2004 to 2007, that established the core group. That it's an unelected group of Western officials, including Brazil, which led the military arm of the occupation in 2004 under Lula, which led then which has been controlling all the actions in Haiti, down to naming who the prime minister would be, Ariel Henry, after the assassination of Jovenel Moïse. I have to quickly say, though, one of the key things that happened is in 2010, after the earthquake in Haiti that killed hundreds of thousands, where the U.S. pushed the sitting president, René Préval, to have elections. And in the WikiLeaks papers revealed to us later that Hillary Clinton actually flew to Haiti and changed the election results, where Michel Martelly of the PHTK political party did not make the first round, but the U.S. forced the Haitian Election Council to actually put him in the second round. And so establishing the PHTK, Michel Martelly, a neo-Duvalierist, as Haiti's president, with under 20% of the people voting, with the largest political party in Haiti, La Valas, not being able to participate, we set the stage for what we see today. So by the time we get to Ariel Henry being imposed on the Haitian people by the core group, we have no elected officials because Michel Martelly, basically under him, we lost a lot of, we didn't have many elections, and then he put in his protege, Jovenel Moïse, who was also unpopular and didn't run any elections. So we actually haven't had any elections in Haiti since 2016, when Jovenel Moïse was selected for us by the core group. And so to understand what's going on in Haiti, we have to understand how the original moment of the 2004 coup d'etat led us to the complete destruction of the Haitian state. And if we don't do that, we don't understand these current flare-ups where people are saying they want their democracy back and saying that whatever negotiations that are happening outside of Haiti has nothing to do with them because it has not included them.
You know, when we went to the Central African Republic in a small plane with U.S. Congress member Maxine Waters and the late founder of TransAfrica, Randall Robinson, and a Jamaican MP, we flew to the Central African Republic. They went to retrieve the Aristides who'd been put there by the United States. And as we were flying back over the Atlantic, they got word from that that Rumsfeld, Condoleezza Rice, and Colin Powell were saying that the Aristides were not to return to this hemisphere, were not to return to Haiti, to which Randall Robinson replied, "Whose hemisphere?" And so he was not able to land in Haiti and went into exile in South Africa, where you have also taught for many years, for over 7 years. And then we went to South Africa when he finally returned to Haiti. And people can see all of those reports at democracynow.org. But I'm wondering, I wanted to talk about the latest news, the Miami Herald reporting that Secretary of State Antony Blinken spoke by phone Thursday with Haitian Prime Minister Ariel Henry in a series of calls that officials described as tense. This is the U.S. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller speaking Wednesday about the violence in Haiti.
As the situation on the ground grows increasingly dire, we in CARICOM have continued to call on stakeholders, including the Prime Minister, to make concessions in the interest of the Haitian people. So We are not calling on him or pushing for him to resign, but we are urging him to expedite the transition to an empowered and inclusive governance structure that will move with urgency to help the country prepare for a multinational security support mission to address the security situation and pave the way for free and fair elections.
But Jacqueline Sharl, the Miami Herald reporter, said that the U.S. was pushing Ariel Henry to resign. What do you understand, Professor Pierre, about the latest? And also, even where he is he still in Puerto Rico, unable to get back to Haiti?
Yeah, he's in Puerto Rico under FBI's protection. He had to leave the hotel he was in when he first landed because Haitian people living in Puerto Rico were protesting his presence in the state. And so that's important. You know, the U.S. government is being extremely hypocritical here, because in 2004, when the U.S. Marines landed at Aristide's house, put him on a plane and told the world that he resigned before the plane even landed in Central African Republic, and basically put in power a whole new government. And now they're saying that this unelected prime minister that they put in place refuses to resign, where he actually has no legitimacy and no mandate whatsoever. I also want to say quickly, just to touch back to the question earlier, is the reason I say Haiti is a laboratory, because this is the first coup d'etat that was sanctioned by the UN, and Haiti was ruled by a multilateral coalition of all these countries. And so the UN occupation of Haiti through MINISTA and through the core group is multinational, multiracial. And it almost seems as if this is a humanitarian effort as opposed to a coup d'etat that has been successful. And so the whole world is participating in the occupation of Haiti unwittingly, because and this is how we have to remember how the U.S. will work. And they will use their proxies to do the dirty work for them. And I want to say what's happening today on the ground with CARICOM is also a problem, because back in 2004, PJ Patterson, who was the president of CARICOM, was very much against the removal of Haiti's sitting president. In fact, he refused to acknowledge the imposed government that the U.S. put on us. But now CARICOM is playing a different role, where they're bringing the U.S., France, and Canada, the people who did the original sin, to pick our leaders again. And so the problem is, if this goes on, and if they don't take into account other solutions that Haitians have been putting together, you know, early 2021, you had La Famille Lavalas come up with Sali Public, which means that we need to start over and change the system. We had the Montana Accords. We have local groups that actually had a solution before the Moïse assassination. The U.S. government was trying to protect Moïse and basically ignored all these local solutions. And so now they cannot say that they're here to help Haiti, as much as trying to figure out how to put in place another unpopular and illegal government. And so then we'll have the same problem a few years down the line. The other thing I want to quickly say, I know in a hurry, is that the people funding these armed groups are the part of the oligarchy. And most of the guns and ammunition are coming from the U.S. People must remember that in the late 2022 and early 2023, the Canadian government sanctioned three of the richest oligarchs in Haiti. That's Gilbert Bijou, Reynold Deep, and Sharif Abdallah. The Canadian government also sanctioned former President Michel Martelly and Laurent Lamont, his prime minister, all of them because they for drug trafficking, but also for funding these armed groups. And so in the news, you get these guys that look, you know, like ragged and poor. But then the people really funding them, because Haiti is not manufacturing guns, are these elites that are behind all the violence. And so I also want to put that into very clear context, so that we know that this is a very complex problem that's very much set up by the 2004 coup, but also perpetuated by the oligarch and the U.S., which worked together to keep Haiti unstable so that we can say Haiti's ungovernable and we need to come in and save it.
Can you explain who Guy Philippe is, who just left U.S. prison in November, his role in the coup in 2004, and now what he's doing?
Right. And this is very important. Thank you for asking this. Guy Philippe was around in 2004. In fact, Guy Philippe was trained by the U.S. in Ecuador and spent a lot of time living and training in the Dominican Republic. So in the lead up to the coup d'etat against Aristide in 2004, what you have is all the fall of 2003, what you had Guy Philippe and his armed groups would cross into the border and ransack and attack police stations and so on and so forth. Back then, which is fascinating, if you look up in the news, the Western media